Welcome to Muffin Talk. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. This radio program is brought to you by the initiative Titi Paunamu, Study and Joy. Once a week, I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, religions and beliefs, and the care of the earth. Many of you will know that St. Peter Chanel Day is usually celebrated on the 28th of April. But this year, due to the 28th of April falling on a Sunday, the feast day will be celebrated on Monday, the 29th of April. In one of my early interviews, I was privileged and honored to have the late Bishop Stuart O'Connell in the studio with me. Bishop Stuart O'Connell was a member of the Society of Mary, and for many years, he worked and later headed Chanel College in Muamua in Samoa. This year, from the 26th of April to the 25th of May, the Catholic Diocese of Auckland will be welcoming the relic of 11 saints, including those of St. Peter Chanel, the patron saint of the New Zealand Catholic Church, Australia's first saint, St. Mary MacKillop, St. Maroon, the spiritual father of the Maronite Catholic Church, St. Alphonse, India's first female saint of the Sarah Malabar Catholic Church, Blessed Martyrs of Patulin in the Ukrainian Catholic Church, and others. For more information, please see the diocesan website. Relics usually consist of any physical remains or personal effects of a saint. It is important to know that the Second Council of Nicaea in 707 drew on the teaching of Saint John Damascene that homage or respect is not really paid to an inanimate object, but to the holy person. The veneration of a holy person is itself honor paid to God. Until 2017, the Catholic Church divided relics into three classes. First class relics were items directly associated with the physical remains of a saint, like a bone or a hair of the saint. Second class relics were items that the saint owned or frequently used, for example, a crucifix, a rosary, or a book. And third class relics were any objects that have been in contact with a first or second class relic. So far, some background information on relics. Let's go back to Bishop Stuart O'Connell and his recount of the life of Oceania's first martyr, St. Peter Chanel. Here goes the recording.
Bishop Stuart, you've been teaching at St. Peter Chanel College in Samoa for many years. Who was St. Peter Chanel, or Pierre-Louis-Marie Chanel, as he was called in France?
Peter Chanel was a young French lad born shortly after the French Revolution in 1803. He lived in a country area. His parents were fairly poor, and he was the fifth of eight children. He was born near the farm they had was near the village of Kue, but there was no school there since the revolution, so he did not begin any schooling until he was 11 years of age, when a French priest, Father Trompier, took him under his wing and had him gave him some basic education. Before that, his mother looked after him and gave him some tuition and various things. But most of his early years, she would give him a basket with food in it, and he would go off to tend the sheep and whatever else had to be done on the farm for a young boy.
Mm-hmm. There was the time of Napoleon, the last years of Napoleon.
Yes, and the schools had not been re-established, the churches had not been re-established, and so on. Later, when he was 11 years of age, he went to a village a bit further away and started some form of education. And in 1819, he went to there was a college at Ambérieur, and he spent 4 years there, so that he began to then pick up where he had left off. And being a rather bright student, he was able to pick things up very quickly and did very well.
Although he didn't have a good start and having to work on the farm, he would still be able to pick up the studies.
Yes, his mother evidently gave him a good foundation in just ordinary, you know, spoken French and grammar and things like that, and he could read and write it, you know, by the time he got there, but that was all. And so,
and you have to imagine that in France at that time there were lots of dialects.
Yes.
So it was very important that his mother was guiding him.
Yes. And from there, from his time in the college in Berieux and a short time at the college in Belley, then the local priest talked to him a lot and they were very impressed by him. And he said that he would, you know, like to be a priest someday. And so they encouraged him, and so he went to the seminary, and he went through the seminary course there, and he was ordained a priest in 1827. And from there, he was a curate priest, an assistant priest in a parish, and then he became a parish priest, and then later he was transferred to a school where he was the spiritual director and also in charge of the religious community there.
And he was still young at that time.
He was very young, yes, and you see, he was ordained, was it 1827, and he was a very gentle person and very kind and thoughtful, and there's boys everywhere. He found the boys' school very difficult. The students were not always that, you know, wonderfully obedient that you'd like them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so he struggled with it, but he persevered, and he did very well. At that time, he became interested with a group of priests who were interested in starting a new congregation dedicated to Mary, which ultimately became the Society of Mary. And he was interested in their work because they were going to go back into the hills and the villages that were neglected after the French Revolution and sow the seeds of the faith again and get people back to church and all that sort of thing. And they...
So that was the beginning of the Marist.
The Marist, yes. And so they applied to Rome for approval to form this congregation, which they were going to call the Society of Mary. And at the time, Rome were not very forthcoming in approving, but they said to them, if you also undertake the missions of the South Pacific, or Southwestern Pacific, we will approve you. And so in 1836, Pope Gregory the 16th approved them. And the first group of Marists took their vows, and Father John Claude Collin was elected as their superior general. So his first task was to not only just to staff a few parishes in the south of France, but to find the first team to send out to the South Pacific. So they made their vows in September. And the first group left in December on Christmas Eve of 1836 with Bishop Pompalier as the leader.
Yes.
And there were four priests and then three brothers. The brothers being assistants, did not do the formal educational training for priesthood, of course, but they were the assistants, and they could be of great help to the priests in, you know, helping run the house and companionship.
Yes.
And so they left then in 1836 on Christmas Eve.
So it was very quick.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter Chanel had always had been interested in mission work, and so he volunteered immediately, as soon as they had made their vows as Marists, and he was accepted. And so that's how he came to be in the team to come out to the Pacific.
When St. Peter Chanel decided to go to Oceania, as you said, it was a quick decision. This must have been a really great challenge.
Now, he volunteered himself. As soon as he knew that Oceania was destination for the priests and then the group, he said, yes, he would like to go. So he was selected. Others volunteered also. And so they left on Christmas Eve, and this time the journey went round the South America and round the Cape of Cape Horn, because Bishop Pompadier wanted to go to Valparaiso, where the Picpus Fathers, the Sacred Heart, Congregation of the Sacred Hearts of Jesus and Mary, were.
And Valparaiso, that's in Chile, isn't
in
it?
In Chile, yes. Mm-hmm. And so he wanted to consult them because they'd been approved and had gone. They took the Eastern Pacific for the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to consult them on problems, difficulties, helps they could give him and so on. So he went there, and then from there they went on to Tahiti, and after a short stay there, they went on to further west, and this is how they came to Tonga, to the Vau. Already there were Protestant missionaries there, and the king said, no, we don't, we've got the Christian church here, we don't need you, so they moved on again, and this time they went first to Wallis, and some
Wallis is still French-speaking, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Father Diane and others got off there, and then they went on to Futuna, and that's when Bishop Pompadier asked Father Chanel and Brother Mary Nidzier, who was one of the brothers with them, would they stay on Futuna?
So in Vava'u, they didn't do anything they just stopped for a break.
And they inquired. They were really just stopped there, but they didn't. Not then, anyway.
And Futuna wasn't the next place on the map?
Yes, well, Wallis and Futuna are relatively close together. Mm-hmm. You know, it's only a matter of hours sailing between Wallis and Futuna. So they actually went to Wallis first and then on to Futuna. And so Peter Chanel then was there for the next 3 years and a couple of months. He found it very difficult, being no language. The chief, King Niuliki, he accepted him, but he was an unusual man. He was sort of, one day was all for him, and the next day, you know, he'd forget him, and, you know, they'd send food for a few days and then forget to send food and all this sort of thing. And he really had a very difficult time there, because the people were not too interested in the Christianity at that stage. They were... They had a spiritual worship of demons and all sorts of other, you know, natural religions.
Was the chief or king, was he also a kind of spiritual leader?
Yes, he was, yes. And he would... So he helped them up to a certain extent, but they got really nowhere with conversions. They baptized up to about 50 babies or so, and perhaps one or two people who were dying. But apart from that, you know, they didn't really get anywhere. There was no building of churches or anything like that, you know.
Did they have a diary where they wrote down what happened every day so that you'd have a little picture?
Well, yes, he wrote letters regularly back to, and so that when the ships came past, he could send mail back to France, and that's how they knew what was happening. But things then came really, you might say, unstuck. It became difficult when the king got the idea, heard that his son was becoming interested in Christianity and may become a Christian, and that was the last thing he wanted.
So he was okay for the Christians to work there a little bit,
yeah.
But he didn't want his son to become a Christian.
That's right, no, because of their own worship and stuff like that. So he just decided the priest had to go. And so on the morning of April the 28th, a couple of warriors arrived at the door, and they asked for medicine. And so Peter Chanel had to prepare this medicine for them. While he was doing that, one of them put a spear into him, another one hit him on the head with a club, and then someone said, finish off the priest, and another took a big piece out of his skull with an axe, and he just sort of bled to death on the spot.
They could have sent him from the island. Why did they have to kill him?
Well, that's how they settle disputes among themselves.
So that's why the 28th of April is the feast day of St. Peter Chanel. That's the day that he was killed.
Yes.
And who recorded that? Is that one of the other fathers who was with them, or the brother?
Yeah, the brother. Well, the brother was actually on the other side of the island doing a task over there, and they got word to him, hey, get back quickly. So he came back, and several hours later, he came back, and Peter Chanel was dead. But so he wrote things up, and there was also a couple of Englishmen on the island, and they wrote up the murder and that sort of thing, and all the details of it, and that's how they were able to get all those facts.
And did they inform immediately Bishop Pontpellier?
They tried to. They sent word then down to Hokianga, which was where the mission station was based. In New Zealand. Bishop Pompalia wasn't there. He was down in Akaroa with the French settlement down there.
That's in the South Island.
And so it was actually 6 months before he got word that, that Peter Chanel had been murdered and then martyred. So he came up immediately, and he hired a boat and came up, and they got the body and they brought it.
Was he buried?
And he was buried there, yes. They buried him almost immediately, virtually almost where he was martyred. Then they brought his body down to New Zealand for a while, and was for several months here, probably somewhere in around about Russell today, you know, in that mm-hmm. area, in the North Island, yeah. in the Bay of Islands. And then...
in the Russell, there is a church called St. Peter Chanel Church, and they have a relic there.
Yes, there's a little shrine church there, but we're not absolutely certain where he was buried, but when they were doing the... renovations of Pompalia House there, they found in the front room, when they lifted up the floorboards, there was a large hole underneath which had all the dimensions of a grave.
Oh.
Okay, we can't be certain, but that's probably where his body was for the few short time it was there, the few several months. Eventually, the body was taken to, on a schooner. It was taken to Sydney and then on back to France, where he was had a formal burial back there.
So he's now buried in France?
No, he was buried there for many years, and then in 1977, his body was brought back to Futuna. And I had the privilege, I was the principal at Chanel College in those days, so we went, there was a pilgrimage from Samoa to Futuna, which was only 36 hours by boat. And so we had about 150 came with us, and we went down to the island to greet the bones when they came back, and they were brought back on a French warship.
Yeah.
And so they re-entombed the bodies there in a shrine on Futuna, almost very close to where he was martyred.
Oh. And he was martyred, and his body was brought, was taken away, but the Christian faith started to grow after the martyrdom?
Immediately, yes. And Bishop Mary Nidzia, he came back down to New Zealand for a break and then came back. And then the other missionaries came. And within 3 years, the whole island had become Catholic. It's one of those things. Nothing happened for 3 years, though, you know, and they would say, well, if you look at it from a, you know, commercial point of view, for example, you'd think 3 years of failure.
And what about the king or the chief of the island?
Yes, they all became Catholics, yes.
Because I read that the same person who ordered Chanel to be killed,
yes,
that he wanted his tomb on the ground where people would walk over it in order to reach the holy places?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah, probably is, yes. We get, you know, those little bits have been put in. You must remember, at the time there were quite a few Europeans moving around those islands, Frenchmen and even Englishmen, and because they were, you know, they were trying to establish territories in the Pacific. So French, English, you know, all around, Spaniards were all, you know, different places in the Pacific too. So these things were recorded, and then they had written up things in letters, and that's what they've got, a lot of these sort of little details like that. Now, okay, we can't verify that's absolutely true, but it could well have been.
Yeah, but there are always stories around and legends around a saint.
Oh, yes.
So even though he only died, how many years ago?
41.
41.
Yes.
So it's not a saint like in Europe where they have thousands of years and thousands of years of legends.
No.
But still a lot of legends around Peter Chanel.
Oh, yes. And the devotion to him has just grown all around the Pacific. So he is like the proto-martyr, the first martyr of the Southeast Pacific. And he is also, the Pacific territories are sort of dedicated. He's their patron. And there are various churches, and our school was named Chanel College after St. Peter Chanel. And the students were, you know, very interested in him, and we would give them talks on him and what he did and that sort of thing. And they were sort of, they knew that he was a special person, and they were very proud that their school was named after the first martyr of Oceania. And as a result, you know, there's been quite a big number of students eventually have taken on the priesthood, and which is, you know.
And some of them are even in Auckland now.
Some of them are in Auckland. Some of my former students are in Auckland. Yeah. And I sort of, so I have to be proud of them myself in that good Christian sense.
So they all grew up with the knowledge about St. Peter Chanel, yes. What he has done, and his adventurous mission to come to Oceania without knowing anything about that part of the world.
Yes. You see, when he left France, I mean, he had to say goodbye to his family and his mother, and he knew that it's not likely I'll ever see you again. I mean, once I got out this side of the world, getting back was, it wasn't even considered at that time. I mean, later on, after 15 years, you could get a vacation back home, but in those early days, no.
Seemed like the only one who went forth and back was Bishop Pompalier.
Yes, he travelled all the time, getting more missionaries, and he was getting more money from Rome and all this sort of thing, because he had to set up the church in New Zealand, and all that South Pacific area was his for a start.
Mm. And you said to me that you brought music about St. Peter Chanel. There are Marist fathers who are singing this music?
Yes, there's one of the hymns that they have towards about him. It's sung by Father Peter Rowe and Father Chris Skinner. And Chris has written several hymns, you know, about Peter Chanel. And, you know, and it's wonderful that we can, you know, even keep the spirit in the music.
Yeah. So let's listen to the music.
Very good.
Sure.
for this beautiful music, for Bishop Stewart, for bringing it to our studio. St. Peter Chanel, as you said, was the first martyr in Oceania. He was martyred more than 160 years ago. Unfortunately, martyrdom doesn't belong to the past. A few days ago, Pope Francis called for concrete participation and tangible help to defend and protect our brothers and sisters who are persecuted, exiled, killed, beheaded, solely because they are Christians. How do you look at St. Peter Chanel and his work today?
He is a great example to us of someone who wanted to give his faith not just to his own country people, but to others who had nothing, no knowledge of the Christian faith whatsoever, and was prepared to leave home and do all that, just as the apostles did when they left, you know, Jerusalem way back. And the legacy that he's left, and I noticed with even our, with the Samoan lads that I worked with, and that they were very inspired by someone who was prepared to do that. That here they were committed, he was a man committed to what he believed and wanted that to hand that on to others, and it would give people a way of life which was very rewarding, and not only this life but in the next. You know? And so his influence today is still very, very strong. We've often got to give talks on him in various places because people don't know, you know, a lot about him, but they are very keen to learn some of these details we have been talking about.
Thank you very much, Bishop Stewart, and thank you for bringing us closer to St. Peter Chanel, his work, his mission, and we can be proud that he came to the Pacific and for the work that he has done, and especially what happened afterwards.
I hope you enjoyed listening to the late Bishop Stewart O'Connell. Pierre-Louis-Marie Chanel was canonized on the 12th of June, 1954, by Pope Pius XII. Chanel is recognized today as the proto-martyr and patron saint of Oceania. His feast day is the 28th of April, which is a public holiday in Wallis and in Futuna. And here are some events coming up with Dietrich Bonamo's Study and Joy. Our next Zoom sessions are Bible stories. What do they mean? Join us in unraveling Bible stories and looking for answers within a group and with Bible scholar Brother Karen Finn. Sunday, the 5th of May, from 5 to 6 p.m. And then the mystery of miracles, this time in the Gospel of Luke. Next Monday, 29th of April, 7 to 8:30 p.m. This session is also on Zoom and presented by Brother Kieran Finn. For more information and registration, please check out my website at www.studyjoy.nz. Kia kaha and keep safe.
Out there, oh, peace is calling in the bonds of love we make.